Hello and welcome to The Book Launch Show. I'm your host, Tim Grawl, and I've been working with authors to help them build their platforms and launch best-selling books for over 8 years. I've launched dozens of best-selling books. They've gone as high as number one on the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and Washington Post bestseller list. I've also worked with authors just getting their first books off the ground and out into the world. I've created this show to share the strategies and tactics I've learned along the way. In this episode, I have my friend Michael Bungay Stanier on, and we are talking about the launch of his book, The Coaching Habit, and how he has put that book out into the world. And the reason why I have him on is because I've worked with Michael before. I've watched the behind the scenes on some of his launches and how he approaches things. And it's always just methodical and thought through. And he does a really good job of looking at a book as a part of his overall strategy, his overall career, the trajectory of where he wants his business and life to go. And so I like him because so many authors look at a book as almost a standalone thing of like, I'm going to write and launch this book and then I do all these other things. And I like to look at, you know, everything we do as kind of all pieces of a whole. And he does that really well. So The Coaching Habit came out, and we're going to talk about this over the next few episodes. But The Coaching Habit came out about a year and a half ago. It sold over 200,000 copies and he self-published it. And so we're going to talk through a lot of different things, but I want to recommend one thing before we get started. So he wrote this really in-depth post for growthlab.com that walks through all the different pieces of the launch. And so that is going to be required reading for these three episodes because I didn't want him to just rehash on these three episodes things he's already written down. So what I did is I took that article and then I found just my own questions in that, places I wanted him to dive a little deeper, things I wanted him to talk about that were beyond that article, but we don't really go step by step through. So I think it's really important that you go, I put it in the show notes. So if you go to booklaunch.com/podcast, and look at any of these three upcoming three episodes, I'm going to link to that article. You should read it, print it out, underline important parts. It's a fantastic article where he walks through each step. So that's going to be required reading. You'll hear us refer to that throughout these episodes. Now, like I said, this is going to be a three-part series. In this first one, we're going to talk about the fact that he has self-published books. He's traditionally published books. He's done kind of a hybrid before and talk about the ins and outs of those and why he went self-publishing this time. We're also going to talk about the design of his book and where he got inspiration for that. And I think it's an important kind of establishment of what he was thinking going into this project. So I think you're going to enjoy hearing from Michael, hearing how he approached writing his book, putting his book out into the world, and then promoting his book. And again, we're going to do this over the next three episodes. So I hope you enjoy it, and we're just going to jump in and get started. Okay, so I know that you had self-published your first book, and then you got a traditional publishing deal on your second book. And then this one, the book that we're mainly talking about, The Coaching Habit, you self-published again. So could you talk a little bit about just that journey, one to the next to back? So
right, the ebb and the flow. So right. This is my fifth book. So I've tried a whole bunch of different things. First book, kind of in the really early days of self-publishing, and it's an overly complicated book. It actually is like one of those kids' flip books with three different sections in it. So we self-published that, but we had it printed in Hong Kong and China and cost us a fortune. And that was a great experience, but probably wouldn't do it exactly like that again. Then the second book, I self-published again, this time much faster because the self-publishing world had kind of got its act further in act, further together. But it got picked up by Workman, which is a fancy New York publisher. And we had this miraculous experience, Tim. You'll know from your experience how rarely this happens. They went, right, we've seen your book. We'd like to publish it. We're going to publish it basically as is. You just need to do a little bit of rewriting. And I was like, I'm about to press go on the bigger print run of this. So look, you got 48 hours to decide whether you want to do it or not. And they're like, And then they went, okay, we'll do it. So I'm like, great. So I got a publishing deal in 48 hours. And honestly, that's not
not normal
for everybody. That should be, this is the exception that proves the rule, that that's not how normally you get a publishing deal.
Well, why do you think you got that publishing deal in 48 hours when other people normally want it?
Well, I had the blessing of going, look, I'm fully committed to self-publishing this. And I've got it all lined up that I'm about to do an 8,000 copy print run of this self-publishing thing. And I sort of, you know, I'd love to publish with you, but I don't care really if I publish with you or not, because I've got my, I think I know what I'm doing here. So it just gives you that upper hand in the negotiation, which is like, yeah, you need this. If you want it, that's great. I don't really need you as much as you might want this. And that's not normally the dynamic when you're, when a publisher is, you know, negotiating with you. So that really helped. Then I did a book with Seth Godin in that year where he partnered up with Amazon. So I did a charitable book there, which is called End Malaria. Not about malaria, it's about great work. But all the money went to Malaria No More. We raised $400,000 for Malaria No More. And the book hit number two on Amazon.com. So that was exciting. And then The Coaching Habit. So that's the book that's been out for just under a year and a half. And Tim, I actually spent 3 years pitching this to my publisher. And first of all, I got an agent for the first time, and I got the agent to try and pitch it to the publisher. And honestly, he's a great agent. Lots of people know him and love him and work with him. But it, the dynamic we got pulled into with him and me and the workman was not a successful dynamic. So I kind of had to not fire him. And then we went back and forth with workman, and honestly, I kept trying to write the book that they wanted me to write, even though they didn't really know what book they wanted me to write. And eventually I just got to a point where I'm going, it is killing me to try and figure out what I think the publisher wants. So this is in December, I guess, 2014. I kind of went, okay, I can't do this anymore. I've reconnected with what I think the vision of this book is. 7 questions, a piece about habit building, 4 managers. And this is it. So this is the offer that's on the table. Would you like it or would you not like it? And they said no to that, which I was disappointed by that because, you know, I'd been a good author for them. Do More Great Work had sold 80 or 90,000 copies, which is a solid B-list book.
So a lot of times when I talk about traditional publishers, I say things like, you know, their first question is, can you sell the book? Do you have a platform? And then their second question is, well, what's the book about? Because they're more interested in you being able to sell it, which is why they publish a book of selfies by Kim Kardashian, but not your book, right? But you had proven that you could sell a book. So why did they give a reason for why they didn't want to work with it? Or
Workmen have a reputation for a high caliber of book that they put out there. Like they're really committed to the design. They're really committed to the experience. And for years, they were led by Peter Workman, the founder, who died less than 5 years ago. And I really think they were just committed to the book rather than the sale of the book. Because they're like, we'll find, we know our taste is good enough that I think it's a third of their books sell over 100,000 copies. So they trusted their own call. And so they just went, we don't get this book and we don't get how it works and we don't get who our market is. And in many ways, they were really correct because this is a business book and it's written for managers. And that's not really a sector that workmen play in. So in some ways, they're like, this doesn't play to our strength. So I then, Tim, had this opportunity to go, all right, they've said no. My feelings are hurt, but I get it. Do I try and go the traditional publishing route? You know, find another publisher, portfolio, or Bessie Joyce or whoever, Barrett Kohler? Or do I go self-publishing? And I was like, I can't wait another year and a half to get this out here. It would kill me. So I'm like, okay, I'm going self-publishing. I've done it before. And what I just needed to say to myself was, if you're going to self-publish it, self-publish it with full commitment. Self-publish it as a professional would publish this, not as an amateur would publish it. And this is a really important shift for me because self-publishing is so easy that it's easy to do a okay job on self-publishing. And sometimes that's fine, right? I just want to see my book. I'm going to give it to my mom and my dad and my kids. I don't really care about selling it so much. But if, like, for me, this is an important part of my brand and my business, what I want is people to go, I had no idea this was a self-published book. And one of the sweetest moments, so Michael Hyatt is a biggish name in the world of leadership and self-help, and he actually ran his own publishing house for a while. You know Jeff Goins, of course, your good friend. And Jeff publishes through Thomas Nielsen. He's got a new book out, While Real Artists Don't Starve. And Michael Hyatt was the CEO of Thomas Nielsen. And I did this interview with Michael Hyatt, which was a cool thing anyway. But one of the best moments, Tim, was when Michael Hyatt went, wait, this was a self-published book? I had no idea. I was like, yes, nailed it. I fooled an industry insider. That's a high standard.
So let's stop here because you keep referring to your business. So you say you want the book to help your business. Tell us a little bit about what your business is and how you see the book working in with that.
So my business is called Box of Crayons, and we are a training company. And so we teach 10-minute coaching so busy managers can build stronger teams and get better results. So we have a very clear niche. It's just about practical coaching skills for busy managers. That's it. And we typically work with larger organizations, although we've done some work with the kind of medium-sized organizations as well. Most of our training's in classroom, although we're starting to do virtual training as part of that. And you've heard Tim and others say in podcasts and in the articles that Tim writes that it's rare that you become wealthy by writing a book. I mean, occasionally some people get lucky. And, you know, Tim's launched 86% of people who've got lucky like that. But it's really rare because even if you sell 1 million copies of your book, you earn quite a lot of money, like $1 million or maybe $1.5 million. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
But nobody sells 1 million copies of their books. I mean, this book has sold 200,000 copies, and that's miraculous. I mean, that's just really extraordinary. And again, you shouldn't expect anybody, I would expect none of my future books to sell this many copies of this book. So, but what I do know is that this book will contribute to my business. So it makes people aware of my business. It's like an awesome business card that I give to people that proves my credibility and gets them interested in my business. And it supports my business. So here's what I knew, Tim, and this is important. I knew that I didn't have to sell a single copy of this book for it to be a worthwhile enterprise for me, because I knew how it fit into the ecosystem of my life. So even if I sold not a single copy, but I just gave away 4,000 copies to key people who might become clients, that was going to be sufficient. It's not what I wanted, but it was going to be enough.
Yeah, it's interesting because I found the same thing with my book. Is before my first book came out, I had launched a ton of books. I'd put books as high as number one on the New York Times list. I'd done all that stuff. But it wasn't until this little tiny self-published book that I put out into the world that, like, all of a sudden people saw me as an expert. Right. So I'd done the work, but that's not what flipped it over for me. It's when I had a book. And it is. It's a calling card. It's a business card. But one thing I think is interesting about what you do that I've never worked with anybody that does it as thoroughly as you is you think through how the book will fit into everything before you write it or while you're writing it. So talk about a little bit about what you created around the book to make sure that it was a success for you, like you said, even if you never sold a single copy.
So there's a couple of things going on. One is, I think, just keep asking the question, why am I writing this book? Why am I writing this book? Because what everybody who's listening to this podcast probably already knows, that for the most part, it's a miserable experience writing a book. I mean, it is miserable. It's like the first draft is hard and crappy. You know, first draft is always shit, says Annie Lamont. And then it goes downhill from there because the draft gets better, but you start hating the book and you start hating yourself and you're like, why am I doing this? And what's the point? And you want to give up. I mean, it's a really great idea to become an expert, to be known for something in this world. It's not a great idea to think the only way of doing that is by writing a book. When you write a book and it's a success, just like Tim's story about his book about, was it 10,000 copies? The book?
Yeah, your first 1,000 copies.
First 1,000 copies, exactly. And my book, you know, when it works, it's brilliant. But most books don't work, which is why, A, you've got to be clear why you want to write the book. And B, you want to be clear on how to launch the book, which is why you listen to podcasts like this. And then in terms of the other stuff that's around it, Tim, are you talking about some of the marketing stuff that I thought
through? Well, no, like in your business, you build like material. Somebody, we were talking about you behind your back, and it was something like you start with the keynote. You think through like, what's the keynote going to be? What are my trainers going to do? What are other materials I'm going to sell around it? Like you think through all of those pieces with the book.
Yeah. So I'm going to pretend that's true because it makes me sound better than I actually am. And it's not untrue. I mean, it makes me sound more ruthlessly strategic than I sometimes am. But here's what I knew. When I knew this book was coming out, I created a new keynote called The Five Question Leader that is deliberately there as the keynote that supports the book. Because I knew that what we had were three training programs, and not everybody would want a half day or a full day training program. So I'm like, okay, so the keynoting needs to be there as a potential solution. What's that going to be? What does that look like? And we built a new keynote. And because I didn't want to spend my life on the road giving keynotes, because that's not actually a good life for me. It is for some people, but not for me. I made sure that my program leaders, not all of them, but some of them, knew that keynote. And so we could sell other people delivering this key content for us. So you're right. We did do a bunch of investment up front to go, how do we make sure that this stuff all aligns so that it's easy for people who want more than the book to find more than the book?
Okay. So I want to keep moving here. So one of the things you talked about is you looked at other books for inspiration. So Austin Kleon's Steal Like an Artist, Seth Godin's Purple Cow and the Dip, Bill Jensen's A Simplicity Survival Handbook. Like, what were you looking for? Were you just looking for like, okay, here's like models I can follow? Were you looking for like, okay, there's obviously market for books like these? Again, like when you're looking out into the world and thinking through the kind of book you want to create, how did you find these books and like, what did you look for in them as a way to guide your own?
I like the question, Tim. So I think a book is more than a book. When we think of a book, we're like, okay, I've written the damn thing. It's a miracle. Now I'm just going to slap it between some covers and send it out into the world. But I am a huge believer in the overall experience. Like, it's got to be fun from the start. It's got to mean something from the start. So part of the reason I picked up those books is because of the design element and the structure element in them. Because these days, I think most people pick up a book and feel a bit intimidated by it because it's a block of text coming at you. And sometimes it's smaller print rather than larger fonts. And it just feels like it's too easy to start and wade into the swamp and then get stuck and then give up. And I'm like, how do you design a book where the very design and the feel of it whisks you through? You know, we had this great moment that it's happened actually quite a number of times where people have picked up the book and go, I don't normally read books, but this book looks like one I could read because it's got a lot of white space. It's got a design feel to it. And I worked really hard with the designer to make it feel open and spacious and accessible for people. And then I knew that, and this is kind of the ecosystem. I was like, who do I want to know about this book if I'm going to drive my business? So it's kind of fancy VPs of companies. So where do they hang out and where do they buy their books? They buy them either on Amazon or in airport bookstores. So I'm like, this book has to be the perfect airport bookstore. So what does that mean in terms of size and feel and length? Right. Most people are picking up a book. They're like, I don't want to pick up an 800-page epic to read on my 1.5-hour plane flight. I want something that looks fast and easy and useful. So people can pick it up and they go, oh, this doesn't feel scary. Look, it can fit into my purse because most of the people who buy our stuff are women rather than men. And I could read this pretty quickly. So that design piece. So you look at Seth Godin's Purple Cow or The Dip, nice, small, accessible, doable book. You look at Austin's book. It's hugely visual, hugely fun and accessible around that. Same with Bill Jensen's book about simplicity, which is like, it's got a real design feel to it. So yes, part of it's around the content, the style, the voice that allows these books to be bought. But a big part of it is around what's the design, the look and the feel that makes these books, I guess this is the way to put it, Tim, which is like, people are looking for any excuse they can not to buy your book. You're like,
that's a great way to put it.
I have enough books in my life. I'm not actually looking for another book, but somehow I'm browsing. If I can find the slightest excuse not to buy your book, I'm going to take it. So I want to go, what are all the barriers? Let me see if I can strip those away.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when you say that, because I've never thought of it that way. Is that is a fundamental difference between nonfiction and fiction, I think. Because fiction, I'm actively looking for the next book. Nonfiction, I got a stack back here that I haven't even read yet.
I am drowning in content. People are drowning in content. Your book, your nonfiction book, it's content.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to put it. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Launch Show. As a big thanks to Michael, if you are at all interested in his book, The Coaching Habit, maybe even if you're not interested, I recommend you go buy a copy. Go to Amazon, pick up a copy, leave an Amazon review after you've read it, of course. But I highly recommend you pick up the book. One, it's a great book. And two, just as a thanks for him coming on and just completely opening up, sharing his numbers, sharing his thought processes, the highs and lows, I think it'd be really great if we supported him by going to Amazon and picking up a copy of his book. If you want to listen to any of the past episodes or get the show notes, make sure you see that Growth Lab article that we're referencing throughout this series. All of that can be found at booklaunchshow.com. I have dozens of free book marketing resources and articles that you can access at my website, booklaunch.com. And lastly, if you would like to support the show, you can do that by telling another author about the show and by visiting us on iTunes and leaving a rating and review. Thanks for subscribing and being a part of our work here at booklaunch.com. We will see you next time.